And? Jabe wiped his eyes. He said I should follow his advice for Orin, that I should turn back now. And he said that only a fool follows another fool.
Callie watched, mystified. Do you still think he's crazy?
Jabe smiled weakly. I'm not one to judge.
Chapter 40.
Annalene had sat with her children until after midnight, comparing notes about what had transpired with Orin. Now that her exhausted kids had gone to bed, Annalene clutched her pillow against the breeze and tried to sort it out. So much news, so little sense. What Jabe had done was bad, yes, but she couldn't figure out Orin's involvement. He'd made the trouble Jabe was in sound darker than a botched prank. But if Orin needed untraceable money, he wasn't going to get it robbing Wal Obrick, who famously kept most of his fortune in all rhodium-plated ingots, buried somewhere underneath his septic system. So what were they doing out there? She looked for the seventh time at the chrono by her bed. It was her birthday now, and had been for 3.5 hours. Hours in which she hadn't closed her eyes except to cry. Her sparely furnished room lay more than a meter underground, with a high window cracked open to the outside. The smells from the livery, as pungent as they sometimes were, reminded her of her childhood home. But after the night's events, she just felt cold. She pulled at the brown fabric she'd been resting under until it was over her head. Is my cloak comfortable? Annalene looked out from beneath the makeshift cover. Backlit by moonlight, Ben sat perched in the open window. He wore the clothes she'd seen him wearing outside his house, the day of that first visit, and he looked grim. But she was glad to see him, even here, even now. Given his penchant for sudden appearances, this circumstance seemed almost normal.
Hello, Ben, she said, sitting up.
Belatedly realizing she was lying half-dressed under his cloak, she pulled it to her chin and blushed.
Sorry,
she said. I guess you need this back.
No, you hang on to it.
Ben turned his head quickly, nearly hitting it on the ceiling above him. Annalene chuckled, her first laugh in hours. She had him look outside for a moment while she found her nightshirt.
Crisis averted,
she said, passing him his cloak as he slipped down to the floor.
You must be exhausted,
she said, watching his shoulders sag as he sat on the floor against the wall. She had almost forgotten that their day had started in the desert before Mos Eisley.
I am tired. I've been very busy,
he replied quietly, a respectful distance from her bed. In the hallway there was only darkness.
I need you to listen, he said. Because I don't have much time.
He looked up at her.
I know Orin was here.
Shifting to sit on her knees, Annalene nodded.
He told you about the money he owed Jabba?
Ben asked.
And the bank.
Annalene shook her head sadly.
It's so much. I don't get how he came to this.
It's about water,
Ben said.
A magical water that tasted better than any other. And the vaporators that produced it.
You mean this?
Annalene said, holding up the flask from her bedstand. She handed it to him. Ben didn't refuse it. He drank thirstily. Wiping his face, he continued.
You told me Danar had never developed the formula because of the cost, but that after Danar died, Orin invested heavily. 6 years ago, she said, nodding. Danar was gone. Orin's wife had left. He'd hit bottom. I think Orin decided it was the way to reclaim his life.
But success never came, Ben said.
Orin's debts grew, and he took a loan from someone who really worked for Moset Benid, one of Jabba's business managers.
Orin told me,
Annalene said.
He started selling things off, Ben said.
I know because I just came from his office at his ranch.
Her eyes widened.
Really?
Ben nodded.
I figured he kept things there he wouldn't keep in his office here in the store.
Then he looked up at her guiltily. Although I checked there, too.
But how did you get in?
Annalene squinted.
She sighed, impatient. Never mind. Go on.
Ben stood, still speaking quietly.
Orin was broke. So he turned to a resource he had control of. A public trust.
Annalene gasped.
The settler's call!
You told me there was once enough money in the fund to defend half the galaxy.
I wasn't serious,
Annalene said, reaching over to nudge the door to the hallway shut. And he was legitimately using the money to buy weapons and land speeders. There's that whole arsenal in the garages.
But he also uses those speeders for his ranch,
Ben said. And there are loans taken out on all the fund's vehicles. As for the weapons, they all came from your store. He wasn't exactly paying full price.
And my new land speeder?
Leased. The dealer wasn't supposed to tell you.
Figures.
Annalene's mouth twisted as she rolled her eyes.
So he's an embezzler. I guess I'm not surprised.
Ben paced back in front of the window, his shadow cast by the moon outside falling across the bed.
I'm afraid that's not all.
Orin could only rely on the settler's call for financing while the fund was flush. When the Tuskens were on the rampage, that was no problem. But 3 or so years ago, something happened.
I remember,
Annalene said. After the raid at the Lars place.
Yes,
Ben said, looking mysterious in the moonlight.
I've heard about that.
After that attack, something happened to the Tuskens. I'm not sure what. But it chilled the Sand People to their bones. And the attacks mostly stopped afterward, didn't they?
Annalene sat, wooden, contemplating.
The attacks stopped, he said. And within months, the money stopped. The settlers' call fund began to dry up.
People even stopped buying so many weapons here, she added.
Orin couldn't make Jabba's payments. There was nothing left to borrow against. His strategy relied on fear of the Tuskens. So when that fear vanished, he had to create some. Annalene's eyebrows shot up.
I can't believe this.
It's true, Ben said, clasping his hands together. Orin and his kids, and probably some hands, staged their own attacks. And your arms business came back, and the fund came back. He looked out the window. And they didn't choose random targets. They struck those who wouldn't contribute.
Her mouth dropped open.
How do you know this? Did Jabe tell you? Ben shook his head. The boy seems only to have been brought in now at the end. Annalene was glad to hear that.
No, the first clue I got was from a Yark tonight.
She said her Tuskens of the Roya Rift, what they call the Pillars, have been struck by settlers 9 times this season.
He counted on his fingers.
That matches the fund's recorded attacks. But Ayak said the area Tuskens have only raided 4 homes in that time.
Annalene sat fully upright. You believe her?
Ben looked directly at her.
Why exactly would a Tusken lie?
It could have been another band. There are so many! Looking back at the closed door, she lowered her voice.
A Tusken can't know everything that happens.
I think this Tusken knows. More than most, anyway, he said. Ben knelt before her.
Orin targeted the holdouts. His strikes never killed. But they frightened and injured and drove people to buy in.
And to complete the illusion, he sent his vigilantes to wage punitive strikes against the Tuskens, and those did kill.
Orin needed a cycle of violence to profit. So he created one.
Ben looked away.
I've seen it before, he said darkly.
She looked at him in anguish.
But there are Tusken attacks. We lived through one.
Yes. But how often do you think real Tuskens strike isolated farmers and leave them alive?
Ben stroked his beard. Do you know Lotho Pelhain? Of course she did. Tyler Bizzard's father. He worked for Orange Ranch years ago. The Tuscans killed him the day you and I met.
Lothar was a holdout. Weeks earlier, he was beaten by night raiders. He moved to his kid's place, where they finally subscribed to the fund.
Ben looked at her.
That's in Orin's records, along with a notation of problem solved from the night Lothar was originally attacked, allegedly by Tuscans.
He sighed. There were others.
Orin wasn't just skimming from the fund. He made it into something Jabba would understand. A protection racket.
Annalene looked into the blackness.
Then he's betrayed every single person on the Oasis.
And the Wastes, Ben said. Don't forget that. Sand people have been dying because killing sand people was the service he sold.
You're not going to get me to feel sorry for the Tuscans, Annalene said indignantly.
All life is sacred, Ben said.
Even life that comes in forms that we don't understand.
He looked up at her.
You know that, don't you?
She closed her eyes tightly, caught her breath, and nodded.
But everything changed today. Mosep wants his money. That's what the Mos Eisley trip was about, he said.
So you did overhear something?
Yes. Eyes on her, Ben spoke tactfully. I fear the marriage proposal is more about money than love. I'm sorry to have to tell you this.
I found out a couple of hours ago, Annalene said. I don't care. I just wish you'd told me on the way home today.
Ben took a deep breath.
I don't like to interfere.
But Mosep said something else about Oren's other resources that put me to thinking about the settlers' call and about Ulbrich, his biggest holdout. On a hunch, I rode there and saw Oren in his disguise. And he saw me. That changes everything.
He spoke gravely.
Right now, if I know his mind, Oren is planning to have me killed.
Killed? She laughed. Oren might play dress-up, but he's no killer.
Ben disagreed.
He won't come for me alone. His kind never does. But I can handle it. I have a plan.
Annalene sat forward on the bed and appealed to him.
Ben, no. Seriously. You said yourself he hadn't killed any settlers. He's not some galactic menace.
There are monsters in all walks of life, Ben said. One doesn't need unlimited power to create victims. One just needs to be desperate.
There's still good in him,
Annalene said, thinking of the smiling man she'd known for years.
I admit he's a lying, cheating, out-of-control scoundrel, and that it's hard to see the good.
Maybe there is good, Ben said, rising from the floor.
There's good in most. But look at what he's done, what he's willing to do. Where do you draw the line?
The question made Annalene dizzy.
I thought you two were friends.
Ben fixed his gaze on a darkened corner.
I don't know that we were,
he said softly.
But even if we'd been friends for years, things would be no different. When friends go wrong, you don't get a choice about what to do.
It sounds like you know something about that.
More than I ever wanted to,
he murmured. He looked away. Annalene stood.
Ben had to be reasoned with. Yes, Oren's crimes would hurt the Caldwells if exposed, even if Jabe's role in the Ulbrich attack never became known. The families were linked in the eyes of the whole Oasis, and she had been profiting from the fund's weapons purchases. All might well be lost for her as well as Oren. But she couldn't risk another life being destroyed.
She reached for him.
You don't have to face him, Ben. This isn't your responsibility.
No, Ben said, turning his back to her. It's in motion. He'll call out his allies to silence me, and I'll call on my own. He didn't explain who or what they were.
But no matter what the end, your path is clear.
My path? She asked.
Ben turned and placed his hands gently on her shoulders.
Annalene, do you trust me?
What?
Do you trust me?
to know what to do now?
Yes,
she whispered without pause. Absolutely. Like no one since Danar, she nearly said. He looked her in the eye. What are you prepared to give up to save your future? Annalene inhaled deeply. A few hours ago, I was ready to give up everything to rescue my son.
That's what I needed to hear, Ben said. He spoke urgently. Tomorrow, when Auron comes for me, I want you to clear out. You and your family. Take what you need, but also take what you don't want to lose, because you will never be coming back.
Annalene's heart caught in her throat.
It's that bad?
His eyes bored into hers.
I think you know it is.
I said I could handle Auron, and I will. But if we do what's right, the lives of you and your children here are collateral damage.
I'm sorry.
He looked down. I'd stop it if I could. I know there's nothing worse than losing a home you've known for years. But I can't see any future where that doesn't happen. Annalene's tears were flowing now. She didn't know what to say, other than that he was right. She survived entirely upon her neighbor's trust. When the truth came out, what had taken 20 years to build would vanish in an instant, no matter how they'd felt about her before. He dabbed at her cheeks gently with the back of his hand.
It isn't fair, I know.
The order in our lives can simply vanish.
Sometimes it's because we're not diligent. Sometimes it's no one's fault.
Sniffling, she looked up at him.
No, she said, wiping her face. It was my fault. I wasn't diligent.
A feeling of resolve came over her. A second wind, or whatever had blown Ben into her world. It didn't matter. She'd had her low moment. Weakness wasn't in her. She straightened her shoulders.
All right, she said. Let's fix this. I'm ready.
Ben brightened.
All right, then.
He turned and hoisted himself up to the windowsill. Start packing. Make the arrangements you need, but tell no one else.
Join me again just before the sun's set.
My work should be done then. She handed his cloak to him.
Where will I be going?
My house, Ben said.
And that's just the start.
Meditation. I'm putting an end to this. You see where I am, Qui-Gon. Sitting in the cold, alone on a hillside, waiting for the suns to rise. You see what I've been doing, the steps I've taken. Moreover, you've seen why I've taken them. I hope you don't judge me too harshly because of it. There's still good in him. That's just what Padme said to me about Anakin. I don't know whether I believe that about him. Maybe if I had been more aware of his smaller transgressions, I might have seen what they were leading toward. I don't know. I do know that Auron Gault hasn't fallen as the result of a single act. He's had a lifetime of small crimes. He smiles and lies, and people like him. But the bill has come due, and his fear has driven him to ever worse acts. I think there's a chance for Jabe Calwell, if he can get away from Auron. I know, it wasn't Palpatine alone who corrupted Anakin. Anakin had flaws of his own, flaws I failed to see that I didn't prepare him to deal with. But the Emperor played a role. I don't know if it would have been possible to isolate Anakin from his influence. I tried, but too late. Jabe is another story, I think. Another chance to get it right. I understand I am not here to find redemption, saving random youngsters from destruction. I'm not even here to atone, as Annalene suggested earlier. I know I'm here for one reason. To protect Luke Skywalker. And to be ready when he and Bail Organa, or whoever supports hope in the galaxy, needs me. If I achieve absolution in that act, fine. But it's secondary. And so, I fear, is everything else around me. Annalene, The oasis. These people. It's all got to be secondary. The only way I can act on a galactic scale is by doing nothing locally. Nothing at all. No matter what my mind or my heart tells me. You've heard me these last few weeks. At least I hope you have. You haven't talked to me, but I hope you've heard me. You know I'm failing again. This time at being a hermit. Obi-Wan keeps taking charge of Ben Kenobi's life. We're one and the same, of course. But the Obi-Wan part of me wants to help someone, to do something right, to be a Jedi. Only then will I feel that I'm able to live in peace while others are suffering. I've had such trouble reconciling it all. How can Ben exist if Obi-Wan won't let him? But the Force is showing me the way. It will be difficult, but there is a path I can walk among all these influences. One that will provide some justice while giving me the privacy I need to do my job. It depends on many things going right, and making use of that message drop I mentioned a few weeks back. And then there are my allies. I can never assume what the Tuskens will do. They are capable of unforgivable things. I know what a group did to Anakin's mother a few years ago. Padme told me that much. I always felt there was something more that she wasn't telling me. Maybe something that had to do with Anakin's fate. I don't know that I'll find those secrets here. But Ayak, at least, seems to feel responsible for her people. I will hope that Auron admits his guilt and turns back. But if he doesn't, I must try to prevent further harm all around. So many things to consider. But when the suns rise, I think I can make it all work out. I think. Well, there is one more potential wrinkle. Annalene. She cares for me, and rightly or wrongly I've drawn upon that. Just this hour, I've set my plans for her in motion. But what if she doesn't want to go along with them? What then?
Chapter 41.
Mornings on Tatooine had never failed Auron Galt, and this one was better than his wildest dreams. He hadn't had much time to dream or sleep after leaving the claim the night before. He'd gone home to find an empty house, quiet but for some soft thumping in the office, a sand mouse behind the shelves, he figured. Mullen and Vika were out back, burning their Tusken outfits. That had always been the plan, in case of discovery. Vika had bandaged her shoulder where Ben had caught her with the Gaddurfi. Mullen had a bruised tailbone from his fall. Auron had stood in the cold with them, working out their next moves. Those moves started at the claim. The second sun had scarcely been up when Auron activated the settler's call. After minutes of the screeching siren, the workers of the oasis appeared in front of the garages, waiting to be directed. It hadn't taken long. Many were headed to the claim for breakfast and were hungry, which was just how he wanted them. Today, they'd be fighting for Auron's benefit. And someone new. "You see, Wile?" Auron said, looking across the milling throng of vigilantes. "There's my army. Your army."
"Yeah,"
Wile Ulbrich said. Standing beside Auron, the old man looked tired beyond measure. His nose was broken and bandaged, and he carried something Auron had never seen him with before, a small oxygen bottle, which he tapped every few breaths.
"We still have to wait for my guys to show up," he muttered. He spat on the ground.
Auron smirked. Ulbrich had been a surprise, a fabulous bonus. Auron would have triggered the call anyway, to execute his next move. But moments after first sunup, a driver had brought Ulbrich to a stop in front of him. The old man had spoken grudgingly then of how his forces had failed him the night before, and how his Magda had nearly died. Then he'd said the words that Auron had longed to hear for years.
I want in.
The plan had worked after all. Amazing.
It made sense, Oren thought. Ulbrich had seen Ben's arrival, but not Oren's unmasking. And a scout had sighted Plugeye leaving the territory. It had been enough to make Tatooine's tightest miser pay the price for protection. Ulbrich was having the appropriate amount in Orodium-plated ingots trucked in as soon as someone extricated the filthy things from beneath his refresher station. It was enough to pay off a large portion of Oren's debt to Jabba. Oren was going to throw the retaliatory strike in for free. And that would take care of yet another matter. Ulbrich's presence meant Ben hadn't gone to him to accuse Oren. At least not yet. Presuming he intended to at all. Oren's secret could be kept safe. And shortly, the whole chapter would be closed. Things were going to be okay. Oren spied Annalene walking from the store to the garages. He hadn't dared to set foot in the store, but he did note that she must have asked Tar Lup to stay over and work the breakfast shift. That was fine. She probably needed rest after the night before. He felt bad about that, but he'd make it up to her. Starting now. Excusing himself from Ulbrich's side, he walked over to Annalene. She wore her heaviest duty work clothes. Her hair was pulled back. She looked at him warily. "A little bit of good news, Annie," he said. "I won't need as much money as I thought."
"Fine.
I thought you'd like that."
"Fine."
Looking straight ahead, she saw Ulbrich. She stepped forward.
"Are you okay, Wile?"
Oren watched nervously as she approached the old man. He knew Jabe might have told Annalene about the raid, but that was all the boy knew. Her words put Oren at ease.
"I'm sorry this happened to you and Magda," she said, clutching the old man's hand. "Really sorry."
Parting from him, she shot a bitter look at Oren. That was fine, Oren thought. She would protect her son, and she would be set back some money, but she'd get over it. Annalene stopped to look at the mustering masses.
"What's this?"
she asked almost indifferently.
"You heard the call,"
Oren said, knowing well that anyone with eardrums had heard it. "You know how it works. There was an attack. There'll be an answer." He looked at her. "Is Jabe all right?"
"He'll be fine. He's not working today."
Spying Glomer at work in the garages, she excused herself.
"Are you going to wish us luck?" Oren said, smiling.
It was too much, he realized. Annalene simply walked away faster. Ah, well, he thought. It's better if she doesn't hear the rest anyway.
"I can't believe this, mistress,"
Glomer said. "That's the offer," Annalene said, reviewing the document on the datapad. "You've been doing a great job with the garages, and I know you've had your eye on expanding." With his eyes a tiny feature on his elongated cranium, the Findian mechanic always looked a little mournful. But now, even Annalene could read his surprise. He'd invited her to the garage to tell her that the parts for her old landspeeder had finally arrived. Instead, he'd gotten the deal of a lifetime.
"Running a shop,"
he said, long arms in the air.
"I don't know. I don't know how."
"I doubt that," Annalene said, patting him on the back. "You're good with customers, and there's not much to hustling power cells and ale. Talk to Tar. He knows how, and he'd like the chance." The mechanic hummed contemplatively. Finally, he nodded, stepping back a meter, so he could offer his tremendously long limb in a handshake.
"I will make the credit transfer,"
he said, taking the datapad.
"You can't tell anyone," she said. "Not until tonight, after we leave."
Glomer nodded. The Findian's head tilted 90 degrees. Yellow eyes studied her sadly.
Where are you going?
Annalene smiled gently. On an adventure. She turned from him and walked back into the hallway to the claim. Exhaling, she leaned against the wall with a thump. Had she just done that? Did I really just sell the store? Even more amazing was the fact that her kids were going along with it. So far. She'd learned upon waking that Callie and Jabe had heard her talking to Ben after all. They'd heard the last part anyway. Jabe was still in such a lather over the raid that he was ready to move to the corporate sector. And Callie had been so smitten with Ben since their first meeting that the prospect of him sweeping in to rescue her family from dishonor perfectly fit the myth. Still, the last hour had been tough. On seeing Ulbrich arrive, Jabe had feared the worst. Annalene had coaxed him from hiding and assigned him the job of getting the house packed up. And Callie, out in delivery, had realized what leaving really meant. There was no obvious successor to take care of her beloved animals. And Annalene's best idea, letting the people who rented the critters today keep them, wasn't sitting well with Callie. It wasn't sitting well with Annalene either. Walking through the shop, she saw them all there. Bomer, at his table with his mug. Lily, hastily addressing another stack of boxes. Even Herbally Napty, counting buttons out loud as she rummaged through a drawer filled with second-hand clothes. How could she leave all this? She could imagine her mother's voice in her head. What could Annalene be thinking? She cared for Ben, yes, more deeply than she'd imagined possible at this stage. No one else had measured up to Dan R. Calwell. But did Ben really expect her to give up everything? Just on the prospect of bad times ahead? Nella Thaney would turn her daughter right back to the garages. She'd have Annalene tell Glomer it was a joke, and he'd forget it. The mechanic didn't understand humor anyway. Annalene might not even have to protect her family from fallout at all. From the side door, she could see Orin, a smile on his face as he talked to Ulbrich. Orin would find a way to fix his troubles. He always did. And Ben faced no danger. Orin was just a blowhard. Why go through with this? Annalene already knew why. She knew, and it had swept all doubts away. All that remained was seeing what Orin had planned. She slipped outside the claim to watch the spectacle. It was easy to hide in the crowd. The mob was the largest she'd seen. It wasn't just the regular vigilantes now. While Ulbrich's land speeders sat packed with farmhands, parked along the western dune. Mullen and Vika were passing weapons to the riders. Annalene wondered how Orin could even be seen in the crowd, much less make himself heard. She soon found out.
Everyone listen up!
Orin bellowed. Annalene looked up. Orin had climbed the service ladder and was clinging to old number one. With his free hand, he held to his mouth a loud hailer, a portable amplifier that boomed his voice across the parking area.
This is a big day, and a terrible day. One of us has turned traitor!
A buzz went through the armed crowd. A traitor? Here?
Well, don't worry. He's not one of us. You're all good people, but you know him. Ben Kenobi.
Annalene gulped for air. The name Callie had overheard was suddenly on everyone's lips.
You heard right,
Orin said, speaking through the green metal device.
You may have seen him coming around, may have heard people talk. Crazy Ben, someone called him. Living in the desert, talking to himself. Well, he's crazy, all right. He's a Tusken lover.
No! Annalene heard someone shout.
I know. Hard to believe any settler would help those monsters. But here's what we know. Kenobi popped up here right after Plug Eye's day raid started. He ran out of the store after his first visit without even taking what he bought. And the next time we saw him, the Tuskens attacked the claim.
His voice rose.
He was here when they attacked, but he didn't fight them. Then he supposedly saved Annie Cowell from Plug Eye by talking to the Tuskens. Talking to them!
The crowd rumbled with shock.
Talking to Tuskens? Impossible!
I hear you,
Orin said, lowering his pitch.
But it makes sense. No barbarian could figure out the settler's call, right? Well, Kenobi helped him. He'd heard me talking into Clayton. He knew Ulbricht's ranch was the only place that wasn't covered.
He nodded in Ulbricht's direction below.
Well, the Tuskens stole a vaporator unit from Master Ulbricht a couple of days ago. And then last night they hit his home. And Kenobi was with them!
Annalene watched hypnotized as a farmhand set out a box for Wild to stand on. The old man seemed shaky.
Galt is right.
Ulbricht called out to the listeners.
I did see Kenobi, but he was scrapping with the Tuskies, I thought. I'm not sure. My Maggie was in trouble.
Because of Kenobi.
Orin quickly interjected.
Because of the sand people he brought there. I'm willing to bet old Ben was mad at his partners. He was there for Wild's money, I'll wager, and the Tuskens don't care about money. They started fighting.
Another ripple in the crowd. Everyone knew about Ulbricht's fortune. Orin shook his head sadly so all could see his emotion.
This Kenobi, if that's even his name, I don't know him. He showed me one face, a false face. I don't know if he's a bandit or if he's gone Tusken, as crazy as that sounds. It doesn't matter. What matters is he's put good folks in jeopardy. And we're gonna stop him forever.
Blasters fired into the air. Annalene cringed. This wasn't what she'd expected at all. Ben had said Orin would round up some allies, but she'd expected more oafish farmhands of the Zed sort. This was something different. The force was too large, and Orin was different, too. He was electric. Telling the vigilantes of Ben's hideout in the Jundland Wastes, a place no decent person would live, Orin sent a hateful energy through the gathering, rousing the crowd to action. He'd made the sale, jumping from the Wheedler to Warlord with a few words. She'd never seen anything like it, and certainly not from him. Orin hit his crescendo.
We take care of our own. So follow me and let's ride!
A raucous, angry cheer went up. Engines started, one after another, as more blasters went off. Annalene nearly dropped to her knees, life drained from her limbs. This couldn't have been what Ben was expecting. Who could have expected it? Orin shimmied down from the tower and turned. Mullen and Vika were waiting, holding a spread-open flak jacket. Orin stuck his arms out, and they dressed him in it like a warrior king. Stepping toward his USV-5, Orin spied Annalene. He winked and was off. Dust blew against the store as one blaster-bedecked speeder after another whizzed away. Watching helplessly, Annalene flashed for a moment on the retaliatory raid after the Oasis strike. That day, she'd grabbed the speeder bike and gone with Ben to follow Jabe. But now, it was Ben in danger. Ben, who'd saved Jabe. Ben, who'd told her in the night not to follow, that he could take care of Orin. Annalene looked back at the garages, mostly empty now, but for her two land speeders. Staring at the leased luxury vehicle, she suddenly remembered something. She dashed back into the store. Tar, serving children dropped off by their parents, looked at her from the dining area, startled. Annalene ignored him and rushed behind the counter. Kneeling, she overturned the trash bin and started rummaging. Amid broken glass, she found the red comm link she'd discarded the night before. She clicked it on and hit the page key.
Hello? Who is this?
Asked the genteel voice on the other end of the link. This is Annalene Cowell, she said, speaking urgently. I'm a neighbor of Orin Galt's. I know who you are. And you need to know what he's about to do.
Chapter 42.
Turn back now. Jabe had said the words at the store, supposedly Ben's message to Orin. Now, as Orin checked his blaster, the farmer heard the words again, or thought he did, in the wind whistling past his landspeeder. Orin hadn't known what to make of the message. If Ben planned to extort him, there'd have to be a meeting to parley. If he'd simply planned to expose the Galts, he'd have to come to the claim. Or perhaps he would have gone in search of someone in authority, oblivious to the fact that no such power existed here. It didn't make sense.
15 clicks to Kenobi's hut,
the goggle-wearing Mullen said, guiding the vehicle. Orin nodded. Holstering the blaster, he looked around in awe. His USV-5 rode at the apex of a flying wing of hovercraft, rocketing to the southwest. Every vehicle the settlers' call fund operated was here, plus Ulbricht's teams. Orin doubted there had ever been so many vehicles traversing the desert at once. He chuckled in spite of himself. Yep, Orin, some pull you've got indeed. Maybe farming wasn't his calling. Tatooine didn't offer many chances for a career politician, but with that new empire on the rise, who knew? Whatever. Ben wouldn't know what hit him. Orin lifted his macro binoculars to scan the nothingness ahead. From the back seat, Vika pointed ahead to the left.
There!
In the middle of the desert, Ben stood brazenly astride a speeder bike. One of Orin's speeder bikes, Orin saw as he focused in. The one Jabe had ridden to the Ulbricht's. Mullen pointed.
Everyone spotted him! Dad, I think we should turn back now!
Orin looked up, startled.
What did you say? I said if we turn and double back, the left flank will follow us,
his son said.
We'll catch him between and herd him like a bantha.
Oh, okay,
Orin said, fishing inside the jacket for a handkerchief. He wiped the sweat from his brow. The land speeder lurched and wheeled, and a dozen-plus repulsor craft followed. Orin trained the viewfinder on Ben again, still almost a kilometer away. The man simply looked back, serenely, as if aware Orin's eyes were on him. Finally, Ben activated the bike and turned. That's right, Orin said, grinning. You turn back now. Kenobi was zigzagging across the open sand. West, back to his place, was barred to him by one line of landspeeders, north and the open range by the other. Orin had thought for a moment that the man might make for the great gap in the Jundland, the pathway the Jawas took to reach the western Dune Sea. But he seemed to be heading instead for the branch of the Jundland Highlands farther east. Orin figured it out immediately. Cute, he said.
He's trying to get us into Hunter's Gorge.
Annalene had said she and Ben had witnessed the Tusken massacre there. Orin didn't know whether Ben had a soft spot for sand people or not, but all the same, he wasn't going to be led into a trap.
Cut him off, he said over the comm system. Send him into the rift!
The Roya Rift had always looked to Orin like a wall that a child had built out of blocks and then knocked half of it down. Here the Jundland wastes bowed inward, a semicircle of flat desert terrain at the mouth of a half-ring of jagged, towering teeth. The wide passageways between the teeth twisted south into the wastes, climbing and subdividing into smaller corridors. The Tuskens loved to hide here. The Oasis attackers had been making for the rift when they'd wound up in Hunter's Gorge, kilometers to the east by mistake. But with the rift, there was no prospect of those on high ground snapping at the posse. The pillars of stone climbed too high, and the paths between rose too gradually, twisting and bending as they went. The land speeder lines held and Ben veered into the gap. Without pause, his speeder bike rocketed for one of the narrower, rubble-strewn ramps. Within seconds, he was gone from sight. Oren knew then that it was all over for Kenobi. Vigilante vehicles screamed into the semicircle, taking up station in front of all the apertures, not just the one Ben had taken. There was no escape. Mullen brought the gaunt landspeeder to a stop.
Are we going up after him?
Not sure we'll have to, Oren said. He's a tourist. He'll find out there's Tuskens up there and we'll turn right back around.
What if he's pals with the Tuskies, like you said?
Mullen asked. Oren rolled his eyes.
That was for the crowd, Mullen.
He smirked. But so what if he is? They'll see we've brought an army and kill him all the same. Oren stepped out of the vehicle and straightened his jacket. He nodded for his kids to approach. Now remember, he said quietly, if Kenobi comes out, don't give him a chance to say a word. You cut him down fast and the others will follow. Vika looked at her father. What if he's unarmed? We'll say we saw him draw on us, Oren said. He glared at his daughter. Are you that worried about him? You do want to continue living it up on my money, don't you?
I don't care, she said, spitting on the ground. One less beggar in the desert. I just wanted to know what you were going to say.
Just follow my lead, as usual. Oren reached inside the vehicle for the loud hailer. Turning, he walked into the middle of the gathering. Under the noon suns, the stone formations gave Oren the impression of standing within a giant, natural coliseum. The place had fallen silent, except for the click-clacks of blaster rifles being adjusted. Armed settlers crouched behind hovering repulsor craft. Any eyes that weren't on the gaps were on Oren. Oren shouted into the amplifier.
Come on out, Kenobi!
His voice echoed all around, but no response came. Watching from cover, Ulbricht looked back warily.
Don't like this.
Don't worry, Oren said, gesturing toward a group of settlers in the rear. Send up the smoke charges.
The mortars were one of the fund's earlier investments, and they'd never had occasion to use them. But they were designed for exactly this, flushing out the opposition. A few parabolic shots up into the crags, and Ben would have nowhere to...
Oren froze.
The screech came again from the hills. A crate dragon call. Just like the settler's call siren, only more natural sounding. Rising and trilling, the noise reached every listener in the would-be arena. Oren looked back at the others, a canny grin on his face.
Don't be fooled, folks! That's our trick!
Some of the settlers shifted nervously, but they all stayed in position. Oren walked back to his landspeeder and brought the loud hailer to his mouth.
You'd better cut that out, Kenobi, or you'll scare your friends!
He waved back to the settlers setting up the mortars. It was time. Then it happened. The Zeltron, Lili's husband, noticed it first.
Listen!
Waller Pace said.
Do you feel it?
Oren didn't have time for empathic Zeltrons on their feelings.
Stay focused, he said.
But now, Oren felt it too and heard it. A low rumble rising slowly to a crescendo. Pebbles on the ground began to roll. Dust rose.
Groundquake!
Vika yelled. Oren shook his head.
No, that wasn't it. It was something else, thundering downward through the gaps from the Jundland wastes.
And now he saw what it was.
Banthas!
One after another, the enormous beasts charged down the stone chute Ben had ridden his speeder bike up. And not just from there. Several broad pathways wound down from the mountains, and now they were filled too, disgorging banthas of all sizes, right at the settlers.
Stampede!
Ulbricht yelled, ducking under his hovering vehicle. The hairy mass coursed across the desert floor like water from a broken dam, sending settlers diving in all directions. The loud hailer fell from Oren's hand to the open cab of his landspeeder. He tried to use his vehicle for cover too, but a giant bantha struck it first,
ramming the hovercraft's hood into his midsection. A heartbeat later, a second Bantha struck the USV-5, sending both Orin and the vehicle spinning. All around, the scene repeated. The charging animals smashed into landspeeders and sent them careening like toys. Settlers dived and fell in desperation. In the rear, the beasts upset the mortars, resulting in smoke rounds shrieking over the vigilantes' heads. Two struck the wall of the rift with an ear-shattering clang, and in the next instant, smoke filled the air. Orin clung to his landspeeder until it bounced into a boulder, knocking him to the dust. Dazed and dizzy, he spent long moments lost in the smoke. Somewhere a blaster went off. A farmer screamed. Orin didn't move. In the fog, a voice came from nearby. It was Ben's.
Turn back now.
Orin blinked. Before, he had heard the words only in Jabe's voice, and then later when Mullen had said them. Hearing them now from Ben himself, he realized the message wasn't a demand. Instead, Ben's voice was calm and consoling, as if giving advice to a friend. Orin reached for his blaster, which was still secure in his holster, but there was nowhere to point it. Finally, as the yellowish smoke settled, he coughed and rubbed his eyes. The landspeeders had been thrown around like sabacc cards in the breeze. Some still hovered, their engines driving them futilely into the nearby walls. Others were upended or half on top of other vehicles. The settlers were in the dust, gasping for air and grasping for their fallen weapons. At least they were all moving, as far as Orin could see. Into this scene, three remaining creatures emerged from the uplands. A bantha calf trotted down, followed, improbably, by an Eope mother and her kid. The trio of laggards tromped heedlessly through the chaotic scene, following the herd into the open desert to the northwest. Orin found Mullen and Vika awkwardly getting to their feet. Mullen had taken a bantha horn to the side of his head. He was bleeding from his temple.
"Can you fight?" Orin asked.
Mullen grunted angrily. Orin took it as affirmative.
"Kenobi's playing games," he muttered.
He turned, blaster in hand. But something else came screaming down from the stone fissure. A speeder bike and rider, sizzling down the pathway Kenobi had taken up into the mountains. It soared in a straight line, one that would take it over the heads of the vigilantes and to the open desert beyond.
"Blast him! Blast him!"
Quick-witted vigilantes caught the vehicle in a crossfire as it zipped past. Several shots struck true, and the speeder bike flashed with fire, spiraling to the right. Its forward strut struck the ground hard. The vehicle and its passenger flipped end over end, finally smashing into an unoccupied repulsor craft. Orin rushed forward. Wreckage was everywhere. A body burned in the debris. Excitedly, Orin approached the rider's side and saw that it was, in fact, a burlap duffel. Half of the smoking bag had ripped open where it had been tied to the handlebars. Without thinking, Orin shoved his hand into the smoldering debris and found the fake rider's stuffing, a bundle of Tuscan head wrappings.
"It's from your wardrobe, Orin,"
Ben said. His voice echoed all around, louder than the crate call and certainly louder than the phantom whisper Orin had heard earlier.
"I brought it from your place."
Looking about in surprise, Orin threw the wrappings away. How Ben was saying it wasn't important. Remembering where he had dropped the loudhailer, Orin dashed toward his landspeeder, piled up against the rock. He skidded to a stop beside it and reached inside the vehicle, fishing for the amplifier's handle. Finding something, he lifted it and stared, mystified, at the Gaddurfi in his hand.
"That's also from your stash,"
Ben called from above. "He's using the loudhailer," Orin realized. Somehow, the man had returned to the floor of the rift on foot in the smoky chaos and switched the Gaddurfi for the loudhailer. But there wasn't time for Orin to contemplate that.
Half the posse was staring at him as he held the Tusken weapon. And wherever Kenobi was, he saw it.
They're interested in your collection, Orin. The weapons and clothing you've taken from Tuskens in the past. That you've used, you and your family, in strikes against your neighbors.
Aware of the stares, Orin threw the weapon to the ground repulsed.
What a crazy story, he said, forcing a chuckle. Dancing with Tuskens is Kenobi's game.
You have me wrong,
Ben said, his voice coming from everywhere and nowhere.
I only wanted to live here in peace. You're the one who's making war. All to sell your protection service.
It's not ours,
Vika yelled, clearly rattled.
Tell them, Dad!
Orin looked urgently toward her. Shut up, he implored with his eyes. I have to do the talking.
He's wrong, Orin said, facing the others. We keep some trophies, sure, who wouldn't? But he got this stuff from his friends back there who sent the Banthas. And the Settlers' Call Fund isn't ours either. It's a public trust.
Then tell them the balance. Tell them you haven't been stealing from it to pay your debts. Tell them you didn't attack Tyler Bazaar's father when he wouldn't join, leaving the man hobbled and unable to save himself later when the Tuskens attacked for real. Tell them you didn't attack the Albrecht place yourself last night. Tell them you didn't flee when I happened along.
Warren straightened, searching for a friendly face on which to fix his gaze. There weren't many. One settler after another looked angered, agitated, or bewildered. And while Albrecht looked ready to explode.
Is that true, Galt? Is that true?
Mullen looked at his father mortified, but there was a way out. Orin fished for his best smile and found it.
People! People! I'm a farmer! He said, shouting so all could hear. Like you! I get water out of the air! That man? He gets stories out of it!
He shrugged theatrically.
You've enjoyed my generosity! You know I do well enough on my own. I have all the money I would ever need.
That's excellent news,
came another amplified voice, this one from the desert. Orin looked back, suddenly aware of the large hover skiff floating outside the rift. On its deck, flanked by gun-toting thugs, was Moset Benid. He wore a neck brace and held a loudhailer in front of his mouth.
Jabba wants his money, Orin Galt, and he wants it now.
Chapter 43.
A Yark stood flat against one of the pillars and looked down the rocky incline to the settlers far below.
The Hutt's people,
she said, her voice dripping with disgust.
We can smell them.
The Tuscan cast her eye across the natural corridor.
You said there would only be settlers.
Ben crouched nearby, holding Orin's green sound device and surveying the scene below. Beneath his cowl, Ben had wrapped a loose cloth over his lower face in deference to the Tuscan's sensibilities. Now he pulled it down and scratched his chin. The human seemed startled by the appearance of the skiff.
This wasn't in my plan.
The war leader's ire boiled.
You told us!
I told you I'd bring Orin Galt to justice.
He could choose between his people's justice or yours. Ben shook his head. I thought he'd turn back. A Yark didn't care what the settlers wanted. Ben had brought the enemy to their gate as promised, but they'd come in far greater numbers than the clan could oppose. A Yark had stationed the few warriors she had at the other access points, but if the settlers really wanted to follow Ben up into the pillars, nothing could stop them. The high camp would be overrun. Ben had acted quickly then, calling for the Tuscan women and children to herd their precious banthas down into the Arroyo.
Many of the Banthas had lost their riders in the Gorge Massacre, and Ayak had been pleased to see them getting some small revenge. The animals had bought them precious time, but now the arrival of the hut's minions had compounded the danger. The criminals did not fear the Tuscans, as all should. It was the huts that had killed Sherat Het years earlier. Ayak knew that Ben deserved death for bringing this upon them. She would give it to him, were it in her power. But in the light of the suns, she had to admit their fall had begun long before he arrived.
"It went wrong,"
she said, not knowing why she was speaking.
"We are so weak. Tuscans are all so weak because of what happened more than 3 cycles ago.
Ben looked at her curious. "What happened?"
"There was another massacre," she said. "A camp of mighty warriors wiped away. The women and children, too."
For some reason, her words seemed to strike a target deep within Ben.
"The children? All killed? A crate dragon? Some other predator?"
Ayak shook her head.
"A predator, yes. But death came on 2 legs, she said. We know.
"But the children," Ben said. "Settlers don't usually kill them, do they?"
"Settlers orphan. Settlers abandon," she said. "Predator slaughtered."
Ben paused, as if seeming to piece something together.
"I wonder."
Ayak saw his eyes fix forward, filling with dread. It looked to her as if Ben was in another place now, imagining or experiencing something that filled his mind with horror.
"What?"
she asked. Ben regained his composure. "Something I'm going to have to look into at another time," he said. "I'm starting to suspect the Sand People's confidence may not have been the only victim of that event."
"No matter now,"
she said, withdrawing from the lookout point.
"I must hide my people."
"I'll help," Ben said, rising to follow. "Protecting homes is my specialty." With that, he turned back and followed her up the incline. Mullen gaped at his father.
"Jabba's people? It's too soon! We've got 5 hours yet!"
Warren stared wordlessly at the new arrivals. More land speeders laden with lowlifes arrived behind the skiff.
"But why now? And how did they know to come?"
Settlers trained their weapons on the skiff, keeping the criminals at bay. The vigilantes, already made restless by the Banthas and Ben's words, looked positively rattled now. Jabba's thugs lived right alongside Tuscans in the settlers' list of enemies. Both lived by a strange code in a world to themselves, until they came out to terrorize the peaceful. Now they'd blocked the settlers' access to the desert, even as they themselves had trapped Ben. Waller goggled. His crimson eyebrows flared as he looked at Orin.
"Jabba? You dealt with Jabba?"
Before Orin could think of a response, Mosep spoke again.
"I was told you were taking an army, such as it is, back into the hills. Now why would you do such a thing when a bill is due today?"
Vika looked at her father concerned.
"It's an old story,"
the Nimbinal accountant continued from the deck of the skiff.
"People refuse their obligations and try to run. Some take up arms and try to fight."
He snapped his hairy fingers and Jork took up station at the skiff's deck gun.
"The afternoon deadline is rescinded, Orin. You will pay us now."
"What's this about?" Orin yelled nervously. "Did the Tuscan lover bring you here?"
Elated to have hit on another tactic, he brightened as he looked around.
"I guess Kenobi works with scum, too!"
"I don't know who you mean,"
Mosef said, growing impatient.
Behind the skiff, another vehicle was arriving from the north.
Your neighbor called me.
My neighbor. Orin swallowed, his throat dry. He had rivals among the farmers here. Did one of them know something? He looked around in shock and surprise, anxious to make a good show of it. Is one of you here trying to set me up? To embarrass me with this nonsense? The land speeder that had been racing up from behind now passed through the criminals' line of vehicles. Settlers raised rifles against the hovercraft entering their midst, and then lowered them as they recognized the driver. Navigating among the overturned land speeders, Annalene brought the Ruby JG-8 to a stop near one of the pathways leading up the rift. She stepped out near the Galt and held a red comlink high. I called them, she said. Aboard the skiff, Mosep raised an identical communicator, the one Orin had dropped in his lair. He smiled toothily.
Good to see you, Mistress Calwell.
Orin gaped at Annalene.
You?
Yes. Catching her breath, she turned to the vigilantes. Ben's innocent. I heard what Orin said back at the claim. Now you should hear the real story. Mullen started menacingly toward Annalene. Woman, you'd better not. Annalene turned to see Vika approaching from her other side. Vika clutched at Annalene's arm. Her eyes looked wild.
Think about that whelp of yours, Vika said.
Orin could only look at Annalene imploringly. Annalene pulled her arm free from Vika's grasp, staring at Orin. She spoke with an assurance he'd heard before. The tower of power he'd often described her as. I'm not going to let you hurt someone whose only crime was to help me, she said. I do care about my family. But what you've done is wrong. Ulbrich stepped forward, rifle in hand, and clearly flustered.
I don't know what in blazes is going on here.
I think I do,
Waller said.
He shook his head at Orin. We trusted you.
All around, settlers began to turn their weapons away from the skiff and its associated hovercraft and toward the Galt's. Orin looked to his right. There was the USV-5 where it had come to rest after the stampede. He started toward it, only to see his precious hovercraft explode in a blossom of metal and flame. Spun around by the shockwave, Orin saw what had happened. On the skiff, Mosep gestured to the Klatuinian at the smoking deck gun.
Jorks an oaf, but with a big enough gun, even he can't miss. You people can't have Galt until we're finished. He owes us money.
Ulbrich shot a hateful look at the Nimbinal.
You pirates don't have any say here. This is the range.
The old farmer's companions raised their rifles.
Our justice comes first, another settler said.
Mosep glanced up at the suns and mopped sweat from his fuzzy face.
You really are a trying lot. I told Orin's handler it was a mistake to offer credit to any of you.
He turned the loud hailer to address his thugs.
Try not to kill the human woman who just drove up. She brought us here. It wouldn't be polite.
He tugged at his neck brace and looked back at the settlers.
I'm sorry, but if you insist on making this unpleasant...
A blaster rifle sounded, followed by a high-pitched crack to Mosep's side. Startled, he twisted his torso to see what had happened. There was Jork, staring stupidly at what was left of his exploded and smoking deck gun. Another shot sounded, and the Klatuinian fell backward, dead. Mosep looked toward the settlers.
I killed me a room full of Tuskens, Ulbrich shouted, rifle sights set on the skiff.
I ain't gonna let you people push me around.
At the sound of the old man's words, all the settlers reached the same conclusion. As one, they turned and fired at Jabba's thugs. Return fire came in, sending others to dive for cover behind the upturned land speeders. On the skiff, Mosep screamed and hid behind the nearest Gomorian, only to be flattened when the green thug took a blaster shot between the eyes. Stuck in the open, Orin grabbed at Annalene, pulling her from the crossfire. For a second, she looked at him speechless, until his hand tightened around her arm.
Kids! Let's go!
Orin yelled. Startled, Annalene tried to pull away, but now Mullen grabbed her other arm. With blaster shots from the thugs coming into the rift, Orin shoved her toward the JG-8, still parked nearby. Annalene yelled, but in the din, only Waller and two other settlers crouching in cover heard. Waller turned.
Orin, stop!
With his free hand, Orin pulled his pistol and placed it at Annalene's head.
We're getting out of here, he said, pushing her toward the landspeeder.
Vika threw an armlet of weapons into the front of the vehicle and slid behind the controls.
We can't get through all that,
she yelled, pointing back at the raging battle. Orin had no intention of going that way. He pointed to the sloping corridor leading upward, the rocky path Ben had taken up into the formation.
There, go!
Under fire from Mosep's henchmen, Waller could only watch as Orin's daughter gunned the JG-8 up the impossible terrain. The hovercraft whined in protest, slamming against ground it had never been designed to navigate. Stray blaster fire struck nearby. A steering vane caught against an outcrop and snapped off. Then the land speeder left the battle behind. A yacht ran across the high camp, robes flying.
To the caves!
She yelled, herding elder and animal alike. Children and scaly canine massives squealed and ran, leaving chores and meals unfinished near the sacred well. The clearing was a somewhat level theater, surrounded by more of the great towers of stone, half a kilometer up the formation. Most of the day, it was in shadows, but now, at mid-suns, all was exposed. To east and west, crumbling blocks piled against the mountains. Normally, those offered shade and shelter. Today, they were the hiding place of last resort. A Yark shoved blaster rifles into the hands of a pair of nurses heading off to hide the children. She had no confidence they would know what to do with the weapons. She had waited too long to teach them. A mechanical noise came from the gap to the north, the downward passage that had been guarded by a Yark and Ben. A land speeder, she instantly realized. The ascent should have been impossible. Desperately, she looked to either side. Their few warriors were still down at their observation posts, watching the firefight. There was no way to call them. Time was up. She turned to see Ben running with a writhing pair of Tuscan toddlers, carrying them to cover. Gaddurfi in hand, she dashed toward him. Handing off the second child to a Tuscan woman in hiding, Ben looked to a wide opening between the titanic stones to the south.
That way, he asked.
Bad country, a Yark said. It is too late. They are here. Quickly.
A Yark and Ben slid over a collapsed pile of granite. Looking back over it, they saw the red landspeeder thumping over the rocky entrance in the north.
Orin, Ben said quietly. He just won't turn back.
A Yark looked out. The smiling one wasn't alone.